from New York City, it's the Gary Noll Show. And now, your host, Gary Noll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Noll, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, commentaries, several of them. First, we screwed up. A letter of apology to my granddaughter from Chip Ward, TomDispatch.com. Then, a commentary, Too Smart to Fail, Notes on an Age of Folly by Thomas Frank and myself. Then my guest, Dr. Yolan and Lucy, she is a forensic psychiatrist. She specializes in epidemic hysteria and somatization and moral panics. She's been there for 30 years and as a clinician and a consultant. She's lectured. She's held graduate-level counseling. She's an author. And we're going to talk today about an area that most people are unaware of. What we learned about serious adverse effects of drugs when a certain gene family is impaired. And we're going to take a look at a lot of the homicides, suicides that have occurred where we believe that the person was in no small measure motivated by what was happening in the biochemistry of their brain because of a combination of the pharmacological effects of the drug they were using and this particular gene sequencing. She is also a whistleblower. And as she mentioned just before we went on the air, if she were in the United States, she would be held in a completely different light than from her native Australia. So that will be a very interesting and original conversation that you will not want to miss. I just recently read her latest peer-reviewed publication on this, the antidepressant-induced ecstasia-related homicides associated with diminishing mutations and metabolizing genes of the CYP450 family. Sounds like something nobody would want to read, but boy, is it important when we break it into lay language, and that's exactly what we will do. And so for those of you on Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, Effexor, and many other drugs, or know someone who is, please pay attention. This may be able to help you understand their patterns of behavior. We will be doing quick updates on a lot of environmental issues today and also some things happening in our society. I am of the belief that we are in not just in creeping totalitarianism, but we're in full gallop totalitarianism and with the militarization taking away our rights on so many levels. We'll deal with that today. But we always start with something that is informative, empowering when it comes to our health and well-being. Now, sometimes that empowerment comes from what we don't do based upon what we know. For example, a lot of people would take aspartame thinking it's safe because it's zero calories. So if we're suggesting that you shouldn't be having empty calories, then the idea, well, why don't I have zero calories? That ought to be good. Not if it's with aspartame. This is the latest from Aurora Guibe from Natural News. Quote, more aspartame side effects revealed, headaches, blurred vision, neurological symptoms. And just let me put this in context. For a lot of Americans who consume processed food and food additives, there's an ever-present component on the menu and one that you're not going to know about. It's also in the menu in Canada. It's called aspartame. It's an artificial low-calorie sweetener. It's been used as a food additive since about 1981, after it was approved for use in dry goods. It was approved again in the U.S. in 1983 for carbonated drinks. And this approval came in the face of much opposition. I was one of the individuals who wrote a scientific paper at the time about aspartame. I'd already led a national campaign to ban saccharin and cyclamates. And I met with the commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration at that time. I met with Congressman Proxmire and Congressman Rogers to talk about why this was so dangerous and we shouldn't have it, but to no avail. So we've continued to get the approval of the FDA, the approval of the Joint Expert Committee on Food Additives and the World Health Organization. So how could they be wrong when they have so much information to select from? 75% of reported adverse reactions to food additives is attributable to aspartame. Of these reactions, many are serious and include seizures and death. A number of the 90 documented symptoms is reportedly caused by aspartame are headache and migraines, dizziness and seizures, nausea and numbness, rashes, depression, irritability, insomnia, hearing loss, vision problems, loss of taste, vertigo, and memory loss. Now, those who study the adverse effects of aspartame report that medical conditions are triggered or worsened by aspartame. For example, brain tumors, multiple sclerosis, chronic fatigue syndrome, mental retardation, Parkinson's, epilepsy, lymphoma, birth defects, diabetes, and fibromyalgia. Those are all made worse when you consume aspartame. Now, to understand the effects of aspartame, all you have to do is look at its genetic composition. It's really simple. It's 200 times sweeter than sugar. It's made 50% of phenylalanine and 40% of aspartic acid and 10% of methanol. Now, I had on the program at one time Dr. Russell Blaylock. He's a neurosurgery professor at the Medical University of Mississippi. And he described aspartic acid as an isolated amino acid that is just as toxic as glutamate, another popular additive, and aspartic acid is an excitotoxin. Now, what is an excito? Well, break it down. Excite, E-X-C-I-T, toxin. It's something that causes excitement in the brain to the point of literally vibrating your neurons to death. It alters the manner of brain formation in newborn infants and permanently results in hyperactivity and behavioral changes in children. In its free form, unbound from proteins, it significantly raises the plasma level shortly after ingestion, and the excess aspartate in the blood shortly after ingestion leads to high levels of certain areas of the brain, and it slowly begins to destroy your neurons. Now, let's just say that you're taking these every day. Soft drinks with aspartame every day. Very common. Well, you're just going to be destroying neuron cells, and particularly in a part of the brain that that is very crucial to you, the hippocampus. Also, you can end up with Parkinson's, brain lesions, neuroendocrine disorders, and hypoglycemia, to mention a few, that are adversely affected by aspartic acid. Now, in particular, pregnant women and lactating women increase the risk of consuming aspartame-laden products because the child's brain barrier, which protects the brain from excess aspartic acid and other toxins, is not developed enough to protect it from the chemical. Moreover, while in the womb and during the first year of life, these compounds can have free access to the nervous system due to the fragility of the infant's blood-brain barrier during this stage of development. Then, of course, phenylalanine, it's an amino acid, and some people can't metabolize it. It can build up in the body, even for persons who are not suffering from a condition. When you start taking it together with aspartic acid, you end up having adverse effects with serotonin. They dip, and that leads to what? Depression. And then you have methanol. Methanol is a very severe neurotoxin. It's extremely harmful, and you don't want that. Normal methanol breaks down into formaldehyde and formic acid, and formaldehyde, as we know, interferes with DNA reproduction and retinal damage of the eye and birth defects. Its toxicity affects the nervous system, and it can lead to all kinds of impairments. So why in the world would we ever want something this bad in our bodies? And it's because we've trusted those people that oversee the safety of our food to guarantee that it's safe and effective. It is not safe at all. My suggestion, never under any conditions use any of this aspartame. Now, what can we do that is good for us? How about beets? That's right. A lot of people pass them by because they don't know what to do with them. Do I peel them? Do I boil them? How do I make them taste okay? Will the red juice stain the cooking materials? People are confused about beets. In point of fact, one of the least tasty vegetables turns out to be the healthiest. Fortunately, raw beets work well for juicing, and that's how I suggest people do it. Beets mixed with juiced lemon and apple is extremely beneficial. And beets can be cooked in about 10 minutes. And then you can put them in any salad you want, cold, and you can marinate them. That's good. You can saute them with some Swiss chard. That's also good, and garlic. So beets are simply great. And why are they great? For a simple reason, they create red blood cells. And the red pigment color of beets is from a group of phytonutrients known as beta-lanins, B-E-T-A, beta-lanins, L-A-I-N-S. Now, the beta-lanins are antioxidants, anti-inflammatory, and detoxifying agents. And the beet provides some cancer prevention capacity, especially for colon cancer. There was an in vitro, that means a test tube or petri dish lab test, reported that the beta-lane suppression of human cancer cells, and it has anti-inflammatory effects, helps prevent chronic diseases, and promotes cardiovascular health. So it's just a really good vegetable to have. It's a root vegetable, but a good one. And when it comes to detoxifying, certain enzymes and beets stimulate glutathione production and connect toxins to glutathione molecules. That means that the toxins then can be neutralized and excreted harmlessly out of the body. Don't be worried if after eating beets, you end up with what is called beet urea. That's red urine. People think, oh my goodness, something's wrong. No, that's nothing wrong. That's normal. Now, another thing that I see in certain markets, rarely ever eaten by any American, is plantain. Plan, P-L-A-N, tain, T-A-I-N. It's one of the most common herbs found growing in North America. And it can literally be seen growing out of the cracks of sidewalk and roads. And it's found on the majority of homeowners' lawns, cultivated or waste-grown, and people don't use it. They should. It's not A-I-N-E, it's A-T-A-I-N, plantain. It's easy to pull this common weed from the garden without even realizing that it's probably more nutritious than most of the green vegetables you're growing. And when you cook the leaves, it improves palatability, and otherwise it's a little tough, but it's been used historically because it's, well, first it tastes like Swiss chard. And further to this, the seeds can also be dried and ground into a meal or a flour. It's been used to make breads. Excellent way to save money. The leaves as well as the juice have been widely used as a topical substance in poultices and lotions, sunburns, stings, insect bites, snake bites, poison ivy outbreaks, rashes, burns, blisters, cuts. Very good for all that. Plantain is a common folk remedy in many parts of Latin America for treating cancer. So you can use it as a tea. You can buy plantain tea, and you can also use it as a hair rinse, and it's good for preventing dandruff. So those are some interesting observations on something that we generally don't use. Now, a little challenge to those who believe that, vaccination equals immunization. No, it doesn't. We have just finished filming the seventh physician, all women, as it turns out, all board certified in their fields, half are academics, who all have now gone on the record stating that the idea was that if you give a very toxic element of an actual disease like smallpox or measles or mumps, that you would then create an antibody response, and that antibody should carry you through your life. That's only true when we come into contact with that antigen naturally. then we create indeed lifelong immunity. When you have chickenpox, measles, mumps, you will have immunity for life. But because we are terrified of natural immunity, we don't trust it. Isn't it interesting? We don't trust something that's natural that is knowingly helping us, but we trust something that is synthetic when there's no proof that it works. Indeed, we have reviewed every single paper in the scientific literature for a couple years now on immunity, and these were immunologists that we were interviewing, and they said, this has never been shown because time after time, the people who end up getting the disease have been fully vaccinated. Hence, they should be fully immunized. Well, they're not. Well, then, boy, what causes that problem? And we're not willing to look at it. We just call it anomalies. It's not. This is the latest. This is from the peer-reviewed journal Immunity. No antibodies required for immunity against some viruses. Quote, a new study turns the well-established theory of antibodies are required for antiviral immunity upside down and reveals that an unexpected partnership between the specific and non-specific divisions of the immune system is critical for fighting some types of viral infections. The research published online in Immunity may lead to a new understanding of the best way to help protect those exposed to potentially lethal viruses like the rabies virus. The immune system has two main branches, innate immunity and adaptive immunity. Innate immunity is the first line of defense that relies on cells and mechanisms that provide nonspecific immunity. The more sophisticated adaptive immunity, which counts antibody-producing B cells as part of its arsenal, is thought to play a major role in the specific response to viral infections in mammals. However, adaptive immunity responses require time to become fully mobilized. Quote, mice infected with vascular stomatitis virus can suffer fatal invasion of the central nervous system even when they have high concentrations of an anti-virus antibodies in their system. And this is from Harvard Medical School. This observation led us to revisit the contribution of adaptive immune response to survival following this infection. And they went on to study this and found out that there's another way the body's actually working. So what does this mean in lay language? It means that we must understand that the healthier you are, the stronger your natural immune system, the easier it is for your body to create antibody response through natural sources so it can better fight invading pathogens. But when your body is weak, when your immune system is faltered, when you're down, that is when you're most susceptible to having your immune system collapse under the onslaught of a virus. One more reason why we should keep ourselves healthy. I'm Gary Knoll. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Now, quickly, we segue into the latest on environmental issues, and I'll go through several of these very quickly because I believe that we should pay more attention to what's going on with our environment. First up, there is let me just get my papers here. I want to take another look. I'm looking at what I've got. Let me give you a preview before I do anything else. I just want to let you know that tomorrow we have Professor Jonathan Hyatt, a professor of social psychology, University of Virginia. We're going to discuss the class of morality and ethics between warring divisions in American politics, economics, religion, and culture. Then on our next program, we'll have a conversation with remarkable minds on the global collapse and the visionary efforts for new forms of sustainable living. Ross Jackson will be on, and he's a spiritual pilgrim and now a world-renowned futurist in Denmark. He's spearheading alternative lifestyles, and he's the founder of the Global Eco Village Network, with hundreds of communities throughout Asia, Latin America, and North America and Europe. And I'll have a chance to share what I believe are the limitations of the Eco Village and the problems with them, and what I could see and see if he agrees or disagrees on what could be a far more interesting way of connecting all this. So that's all coming at us in the very near future. Now, I'm going to do a commentary on why the environmental movement is not winning on tomorrow's program. But today, Accelerated climate change driven by human activity has led to soaring temperatures around the world, and the decade between 2001 and 2010 was the warmest ever recorded in all continents on the globe. That's according to a new report from the World Meteorological Organization. Additionally, quote, an unprecedented heat wave in the United States has set or tied more than 7,000 high temperature records across the country, according to the same report. Quote, this heat wave is essentially unprecedented. It's hard to grasp how massive and significant this is, end quote. That's for all those people who believe, oh, global warming, it doesn't exist. Oh, yes, it does exist. And that's just but one example of it. Also from the environmental segment, glyphosate-based herbicide induces necrosis and apoptosis in mature rat testicular cells in vitro, and testosterone decreased at lower levels. That's a scientific study, the title of it. And what it means in lay language, the number one herbicide in the world is Roundup, and that is a glyphosate-based pesticide. And it's really bad. I suggest you not use it. And that's just one more study showing that it will, in this laboratory setting, it decreased testosterone and caused cells that to become abnormal. So why in the world would you want something like that in your body? And finally, on the environmental front, the Environmental Health Trust is saying that we should put warning labels on all cell phones. Quote, the label should be warning. The Ministry of Health cautions that heavy use and carrying the device next to the body may increase the risk of cancer, especially among children. Unquote. Good for them. There's over 40 different studies now showing the dangers of cell phones, and yet we continue to use them without any thought that they could be a problem. They are a problem. Now, we're going to have two short commentaries. Before we go to that, the FDA is at it again. We'll listen to this from the latest on the FDA and then come right back. Please stay with us.
Prescription depressant hit the shelves today. Approved by the FDA last month, Despondex is intended as a treatment for the approximately 20 million Americans who are insufferably cheery. Tests prove the drug is effective at reducing a range of symptoms, from squealing loudly when a friend calls to use of the phrase cool beans and excessive hugging. Dr. Alman Way calls the drug a huge step forward in the battle against exuberance.
If you're in a good mood every so often, well, that's fine. That's normal. This is for those that have a persistent positive outlook on life.
Eva Henry of New Haven, Connecticut began participating in a clinical trial of Despondex 6 weeks ago.
I was always telling people how cute their outfits were and bringing them little gifts. I'd beam at anyone who made eye contact with me. I didn't realize life didn't have to be like that.
Eva said she never knew how her annoyingly chipper attitude was affecting those around her.
Over and over again, I'd ask Jeff to ride his bike down to the botanical garden with me, no matter how many times he said no.
And she was always smiling, but I didn't know what to do to help her.
I used to think, why am I the only one trying to set up single friends with each other, and now I realize it. I was sick. I need a treatment.
Eva says the drug may have saved their marriage.
Now Jeff and I can just waste the night sitting on the couch watching a TV show neither of us enjoy, like a regular couple.
Not everyone is convinced that Despondex is the cure-all for perkiness, however. In this week's Time magazine, Michael Pelosik of UCLA argues that many patients get similar results from natural remedies, something as simple as a diet of corn syrup and white bread and a total lack of exercise. But Dr. Way disagrees.
We have to erase the stigma attached with getting chirpy people help, real medical help. I mean, do you know what it's like to be around these people? It's pretty annoying.
Doctors estimate the new drug could reduce the number of costume or theme parties in the U.S. by up to 40%.
Well, now we go to our commentary. This is from Chip Ward. This is his letter to his granddaughter, Maddie. I address this letter to you, but please share it with Jack and others who are yet unborn. Also with your children and theirs. My unconditional love for my children and grandchildren convinces me that if I could live long enough to embrace my great-grandchildren, I would love them as deeply as I love you. On behalf of my generation of grandparents, to all of you, I want to apologize. I'm sorry we used up all the oil. It took a million years for those layers of carbon goo to form under the Earth's crust, and we used it up in a geological instant. No doubt there will be some left, and perhaps you can get around the fact that what remains is already distant, dirty, and dangerous, but the low-hanging fruit will be long gone by the time you're my age. We took it all. There's no excuse, really. We're gas hogs, plain and simple. We got hooked on faster, bigger, more, and charged right over to the carrying capacity of the planet. Oil made it possible. Machines are our slaves, and coal, oil, and gas are their food. They helped us grow so much of our own food that we could overpopulate the Earth. We could ship stuff and travel all over the globe and still have enough left to drive home alone in trucks and time to watch Monday Night Football. Rocket fuel, fertilizer, baby bottles, lawn chairs, we made everything and anything out of oil and could never get enough of it. We could have conserved more for you to use in your lifetime. Instead, we demonstrated the self-restraint of crack addicts. It's been great having all that oil to play with, and we built our entire world around it. Living without it will be tough. We're sorry. I hope you develop clean, renewable energy sources soon, or that you and your generation figure out how to do that quicker. In the meantime, sorry about the climate. We just didn't realize our addiction to carbon would come with monster storms, epic droughts, biblical floods, wildfire infernos, rising seas, migration, starvation, pestilence, civil war, failed states, police states, and resource wars. I'm sure Henry Ford didn't see that coming when he figured out how to mass-produce automobiles and sell them to everyone. I know my parents didn't see the downside of using so much gas and coal. The all-electric house and a car in the driveway was their American dream. For my generation, owning a car became a birthright. Today, it would be hard for most of us to live without a car. I have no idea what you'll do to get around or how you'll heat your home. We also pigged out on most of the fertile soil, the forests and their timber, the oceans that teem with fish before we scraped the seabed raw, bumped our poisonous waste, you know, every way we could, but always in the water, and turned it acid and barren. Hey, that ocean was an awesome place, and it's too bad you can't know it the way we did. There were bright coral reefs, vibrant runs of red salmon, ribbons of birds embroidered the shore, graceful shells, the solace and majesty of the wild sea. But then I never saw the vast herds of bison that roamed the American heartland, so I know it is hard to miss something you only saw in pictures, but we have a lot of pictures. We thought we were pretty smart because we walked on a moon. Our technology is indeed amazing. I was raised without computers, smartphones, and the World Wide Web, so I appreciate how our engineering prowess has enhanced our lives. I also know it is on the downside. When I was a kid, we worried that the Cold War would go nuclear, and it wasn't until a river caught fire near Cleveland that we realized fouling our own nest isn't so smart after all. Well, you know about the rest. The coal-fired power plants, acid rain, the hole in the ozone layer. There were plenty of signs we took a wrong turn, but we kept going. Dumb, stubborn, blind. Who knows why we couldn't stop? Greed, maybe? Powerful corporations we couldn't overcome? It won't matter much to you who is to blame. You'll be too busy coping in the diminished world we bequeath you. One set of problems we pass on to you is not altogether our fault. It was handed down to us by our parents' generation, so hammered by cataclysmic world wars and economic hardships that they armed themselves to the teeth and saw enemies everywhere. Their paranoia was understandable, but they passed their fears on to us, and we should have seen it. We didn't. I've lived through four major American wars in my 62 years. By now, defense and homeland security are powerful industries. with a stranglehold on Congress and the entire economy. We knew that it was a lousy deal, but trauma and terror darkened our imaginations and distorted our priorities. And like you, we needed jobs. Sorry we spent your inheritance on all that cheap bling and especially all those weapons of mass destruction. That was crazy and wasteful. I can't explain it. I guess we've been confused for a long time now. Oh, and sorry about the confusion. We called it advertising, and it seemed like it would be easy enough to control. When I was a kid, commercials merely interrupted entertainment. Don't know when the lines all blurred and bye, bye, bye became the message. It is now ubiquitous and all-consuming. It just got out of hand, and we couldn't stop it. Even when we realized we hated it, it was still taking us everywhere. We turned away from one another, tuned in, and got lost. I'm betting you can still download this note, copy it, share it, bust it up, remake it, and that you do it while you're plugged into some sort of electrical device you can't live without. So maybe you don't think that an apology for technology is needed, and if that's the case, an apology is especially relevant. The tools we gave you are fine, but the apps are mostly bogus. We made an industry of silly distraction. When our spirits hungered, we fed them clay that filled but not nourished. If you still don't know the difference, blame us because we started it. And sorry about the chemicals. I mean the ones you were born with in your blood and bones that stay there, even though we don't know what they'll do. Who thought that the fire retardant that kept smokers from igniting their pillows and children's clothes from bursting into flames would end up in the umbilical cords in infants? It just seemed like better living through chemistry at the time. Same with all the other chemicals you carry. We learned to accept cancer, and I guess you will too. I'm sure there will be better treatments for that in your lifetime than we had in ours. If you can afford them, that is. Turning health care over to the predatory corporations was another bad move. All in all, our chemical obsession was pretty reckless, and we got into it the same old patterns. Just couldn't give it up. All that neat stuff. We tried. We took the lead out and did as much as we could. We banned EDT, but mostly we did it too little and too late. I hope you've done better. Maybe it will help your generation run out of oil, since so many of the toxic chemicals come from oil. Anyway, we didn't see it coming, and we could have, should have, are bad. There's so many of the things I wish I could change for you. We leave behind a noisy world. Silence is rare today, and unless some future catastrophe has left your numbers greatly diminished, your machines stilled, and your streets ghostly empty, it is likely that the last remnants of tranquility will be gone by the time you're my age. And how about all those other species, the abundant and wondrous creatures that are fading away forever as I write these words, 200 per day? I never saw a polar bear, and I guess you can live without them too, but when I think about the peep and chirp of frogs at night, the hum of bees busy on the flower bed, the thrill of birds at dawn, and so many other splendorous pleasures that you no longer have, I ache with regret. We should have done more to keep the planet whole and well, but we couldn't get clear of the old ways of seeing, the ingrained habits, the way we hobble on one another's choices so that the best intentions never get realized. Mostly I'm sorry about taking all the good water. When I was a kid, I could kneel down and drink from a brook or spring whenever we camped and played. We could still hike up to glaciers and ski down snow-capped mountains. Clean, crisp, cold, fresh water is life's most precious taste. A life-giving gift, all the water's holy. I repeat, it is holy. We treated it instead as if it were merely useful. We wasted it and tainted it, and again, in a geological moment, sucked up aquifers that had been 10,000 years gathering below ground that water. In my lifetime, glaciers have melted away. Wells are running dry, dust storms are blowing, and rivers are like the mighty Colorado are running dry before they even reach the sea. I hate to think of what will be left for you. Sorry, so very sorry. I'm sure that a boatload of other troubles were leaving you that I haven't even covered yet. My purpose is not to offer a complete catalog of all of our follies and atrocities, but to do what we taught your parents to do when they were as little as you are today. When you make a mistake, we told them, admit it and then do better. If you do something wrong, own up and say you're sorry. After that, you can work on making amends. I'm trying to see a way out of the hardship and turmoil we're making for you. As I work to stop madness, I will be mindful of how much harder your struggles will be to deal with the challenges we leave you to face. The best I can do to help you through the overheated future we are making is to love you now. Can't change the past. My struggle to make a healthier future for you is uncertain, but today I can teach you, encourage you, and help you be as strong and smart and confident as you can be, so that whether the future holds good or bad, whatever crisis comes, you're ready as possible. Chip Ward to his granddaughter. Boy, how prophetic that is. I'm Gary Knoll, and I'm going to save my next commentary for tomorrow, and Too Smart to Fail, one that I have a lot of my own writing in, as well as Thomas Frank, and take just a moment to remind you that when you think your world is fine, and there's no such thing as fascism, and there couldn't be because, well, you voted for Obama or you voted for Bush, and they're certainly not in your mind supporting anything that would represent a threat to us. Here's just one example of what's happening every day in the United States, and we're doing absolutely nothing about it.
75 years behind bars. A prison sentence that long is rarely handed down, and it's usually just for murderers or rapists. But a local man faces 75 years in prison for a nonviolent crime. What he's accused of doing is something many people have done, but most don't realize it's actually illegal.
Let him go!
What you're witnessing is now against the law in some states. This is also becoming illegal. As well as this.
Don't tase me, bro!
These infamous scenes are being banned in more and more states.
Sit down!
The police in these recordings are not necessarily the ones breaking the law. It's the people recording the police. Recording audio of law enforcement without their consent is considered a crime in a dozen states, including Illinois.
That sounds like a plot in a movie. To call what I did a crime is ridiculous.
Michael Allison publicly recorded law enforcement in Robinson, Illinois. Now he's charged with five felonies with 15 years in prison for each count. That's a total of 75 years if convicted.
75 years in prison. And it's just so unbelievable.
Allison could spend the rest of his life behind bars. The 42-year-old is out on bail preparing to stand trial. The crime he's accused of? Eavesdropping.
This doesn't make any sense. And for one thing, the statute, as it's written, can be interpreted any which way.
Illinois is one of the states applying old eavesdropping and wiretapping statutes to new technologies like cell phones or anything else that records audio. Those laws technically make it illegal to record on-duty law enforcement officials without their consent. The penalty for that crime here in Illinois is the same as rape.
They're actually trying to say that I have committed a crime, and it's a class one felony.
As bad as rape.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
It is extremely serious offense.
Chapin Rose worked as a prosecutor in nearby Coles County a few years ago. Rose saw the problems with Illinois' eavesdropping law as new recording technologies came along.
It dawned on me at the time that, you know, this is, you know, going to get crazy. But
now Michael Allison is heading to trial for recording on-duty law enforcement officials in public. Similar cases across the country have ended with the charges being reduced or dropped. Allison is being prosecuted by Crawford County State's Attorney Tom Wiseman. Wiseman refused to talk to us about this case or the eavesdropping law.
They're using it as written and as applied as a shield law to protect public officials from any kind of public scrutiny.
Now, keep in mind, this is also could be applied to a TSA agent who's been militarized. Let's say that you see a police officer like the Rodney King beatings, and you recorded just the audio part, and then you put that up on the internet. that could be a felony. That could end, and depending upon the state, you could go. In this case, this man was recording what he considered the wrong actions of the police, just the audio part, 75 years in jail. So think of how many people out there now would be put in jail for the rest of their life where a rapist or a murderer would get out sooner than you would for doing nothing more than informing the public about corruption or malfeasance by the police, the armed forces, TSA agents who are acting like little Nazis now. Just imagine. So the next time you decide we don't have fascism in America, oh yeah, we do. And we have something else in America. Real quick, how tracking tools in your car can reveal what you say, where you go, and what you do. This is the latest based upon new car technology. So now you don't have to have a cell phone on in your car. Your car can record you. Separately, New York City police forces scanned the retina of Occupy Wall Street activists. And why? Why should they do that, and why hasn't that been an outrage? Quote, your new HD TV, high-definition TV, is watching you, not just watching you. Did you know that there are televisions now that can film everything going on in the room and record it and store it? For what reasons? Think of how many times you've said something, done something in a room where there's a television. Yeah. So where are we going with this? And finally, feeding the homeless is banned in major cities all across America. Philadelphia is one. Orlando, Houston, Dallas, New York City, Las Vegas. Now that can be a crime if you feed a homeless person. And this is a time when we have more homeless people than ever before in our history. So the answer to homeless people is get rid of the homeless people and arrest anyone trying to help them. Anyone see a problem with this? I do. I'm Gary Knoll. Now let's go to my guest who's sitting in our studio in New York City. I mentioned her earlier. She is an Australian forensic psychiatrist specializing in the epidemic hysteria and also moral panics. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi. Pleased to be here.
Now, what I'm going to do is I'd like for you to talk about what you have discovered. Explain the CYP450 family of genes and what they primarily do. Then take a look at the whole idea of a pharmacological product like an antidepressant inducing an akathisia that leads to homicide,
yes,
or can causing schizophrenia, or causing schizophrenia-like symptoms, or causing erratic behavior, and people are not aware of this, and why everyone, given any medication, should be tested, because could not this also be the cause of much of the autism when a vaccine is given, and the vaccine would adversely affect or be adversely affected by this gene sequence in the body, which then predisposed some to autism or brain dysfunction, and others not, would not be susceptible. Take us through this step by step, please.
Okay. Well, I don't know anything about vaccines, and I'm sure that there are genes that carry, that determine whether or not you can get rid of mercury in your body, but these are not the CYP450 genes. When I was a medical student, which was 50 years ago, we knew by second year physiology that whether or not you managed toxins in your body was determined by genes. The change 50, 60 years later is that we know the names of the genes and we know the names of the drugs, the new drugs. The drug companies have known this for a long time. In 1998, Roger Lane of Pfizer wrote about akathisia and suicide as a consequence of taking antidepressants if you didn't have the right CYP450 genes. They're called SIPs. In the last 5-10 years or so in Australia, we've been able to do tests from a buccal swab, from a cheek swab, to tell you whether you have those genes. We test for three of them. They've got names. They're called 2D6, 2C9, 2C19. We don't test for the others, like 3A4, which some people can have an ineffective version. We don't test for 1A2. Some people can have a version that cannot be induced. These are the metabolizing genes for party drugs, that is, cannabis, amphetamines, cocaine. They are the metabolizing genes for common antidepressants, Prozac, Zoloft, Lustral, Luvox, I'm not sure what they're called here. And they're also the metabolizing genes for another group of drugs marketed as antipsychotics, that is, Risperdal, Zyprexa, and quetiapine, and a whole lot of others. So we've got the same genes metabolizing three lots of substances. And when they're not there, the levels, the blood levels of these substances go up. When the genes are not functioning, they go up. And when they go up over outside the therapeutic window of opportunity, you get the side effects that are listed in all the side effects lists in the product information that you can get off the website of the United States Food and Drug Administration. One of these, the worst of these, the most dangerous of these side effects is called akathisia. And it's a Greek word for I can't sit still. Now, many people who are on antidepressants will find that they have either constant or intermittent bouts of being unable to keep still. They will fidget, they'll get up and down like a yo-yo, they'll rush around, they'll go for walks, they go for drives to nowhere, and that sort of thing. My message to you is do not stop taking your medication quickly. You have to go and see your chemist about getting compounded medication to come off it very, very, very slowly and under medical supervision. Because if you stop taking the medication, the symptoms you have could get infinitely worse and could go on getting infinitely worse for weeks and weeks and weeks. Okay, so what I did was I was seeing a lot of people who had what we call workers' compensation. They were people who'd had stress at work and didn't get on with their neighbours or their bosses. There were people who'd had back injuries and arm injuries and were already on pills that are quite incompatible with antidepressants. Many painkillers are incompatible with antidepressants. And because the advertising, the promotion for these drugs, the drug reps that go around giving away trinkets and trips and so on, these drug reps tell doctors that these drugs have no side effects and no interactions. That's not what product information says, but that's what your doctor believes. They have no interactions and no side effects. So, of course, having been told that all these new drugs have no interactions and no side effects, when the side effects appear, the doctor says, no, no, you haven't got side effects. Oh, it's obviously that you're worsening depression and suicidality, which is mentioned in product information from 2004. It's obvious that you need more. Or if you have the side effect of hallucinating, that is, seeing things that aren't there, hearing things that aren't there, the doctor will think, oh, we have uncovered a schizophrenia. And they will whack in an antipsychotic, which demands the same metabolism, that your bad reaction to antidepressants has shown that you don't have. So it's a great business plan for the drug companies. They've got a remedy for every side effect because they have managed to persuade the world the side effects don't exist.
I appreciate that. Now, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. If you could give us an abbreviated answer on these, I'd appreciate it because we can get more information in. Do you believe, based upon your experience of 50 years, that's 50 years, as a practicing psychiatrist and a clinician, that many of the problems people have today are brain chemical imbalances or merely life issues that do not require medication but require counseling?
It's the second one. I mean, ordinary common human emotions, stress, anxiety, worries, sleeplessness, they have been transformed into disorders that are there ready for pills. It doesn't make sense. These pills can't possibly make them better and can, and very likely do, make them worse.
Secondly, I reviewed every single study that I could find in the peer-reviewed literature comparing placebos, a sugar pill, to a tranquilizer, and I found that without exception, you do not have a benefit from the tranquilizer, and yet you have serious side effects. Do you believe that we are promoting very serious drugs, and those drug side effects could be having devastating effects upon the person instead of seeking a more non-toxic approach to helping the person?
Absolutely. We've got 6% of the American population on antipsychotic medication. At a maximum, 1% suffers from schizophrenia and 0.5% suffer from bipolar disorder. And those statistics are known to the World Health Organization, have been constant across cultures and across ages. Now, we are treating all these people for, inverted commas, schizophrenia or, inverted commas, bipolar disorder. It's nonsense.
I have a list of over 300 individuals in the United States over the last 30 years who have committed massive crimes, mainly homicides against people they know or in the workplace, shooting people and then themselves. 98% of those people are on antipsychotic medication. Are you aware that a person taking these medications could then become violent? And this is almost never discussed, that their violence was due to the medications they were taking?
That's absolutely correct. Akathisia has been described as the only condition in the world that makes you want to kill yourself or somebody you really love. The only condition in the world that makes you want to kill yourself or somebody you really love. Now, that doesn't happen with schizophrenia. There's no aggression in the criteria for schizophrenia. Akathisia is also, has toxic hallucinosis with it, and obviously very severe mental impairment, that is, people can't think clearly. Psychiatric drugs produce a chemical lobotomy. That's how they were advertised in order to get over the epidemic of lobotomies that America embarked on after 1949.
This soldier that just killed 16 people in Afghanistan, I was just told, though I haven't been able to confirm, that he was on a medication. Are you aware of that?
Yes. It's been published in the Huffington Post. That he was on Lariam, which is an anti-malaria medication. So was Nidal Malik Hassan, the psychiatrist major who killed 13 people. And another name I got was Master Sergeant William Wright, was on Lariam. Now, Lariam is known to induce homicidal ideation. It's not even a psychiatric drug. There are a number of non-psychiatric drugs that do it. And I think the military has got to face what it's doing, because it's been on the front page of Time magazine that all the suicides in the military and returned soldiers are occurring in people who are on antidepressants. Why can't they look at it? Why can't organizations look at themselves? It's always been very puzzling.
That's a commentary I was actually going to do today, but I'll do it tomorrow.
Okay, I'm sorry.
On the state of our folly. But I believe that, a very quick statement, I believe that we're incapable to challenge anything outside of our belief systems, irrespective of logic, reason, or facts. And also, we never punish people in our society ever who are doing what everyone else agrees by consensus, at least the leaders of a group, is the correct approach, even when that correct approach could be deadly, devastating. Like, no doctor was prosecuted for giving the death drug that killed 60,000 Americans. Vioxx. Not a single person was held accountable, nor was there any massive guilt or change or desire to change the system, because we don't punish people for doing the wrong thing, providing that we have codified their behavior and their protocols as being right. Your thoughts?
Well, that's exactly what's happening in Australia. The standard is, it's perfectly all right to give antidepressants and then give antipsychotics for people who become psychotic on party drugs, because that's what we all do. That is their standard. There are higher standards available. There's scientific standards like the Daubert standard, which is what the Supreme Courts in the United States use. Once these matters get into the higher courts, they're properly dealt with. They're not properly dealt with in military tribunals. They're not properly dealt with by regulators of medicine like medical boards. They just take the position, oh, this doctor's doing what everybody else does, so it must be all right. And nobody's able to get behind that.
We're out of time. I appreciate you coming on and sharing this very important insight, and we are publishing your article up on our website for people to read it in depth. And what my guest, Yola Lucria, is saying is that these psychiatric medications we're using, this massive overdrugging, overdiagnosing, is causing a lot of unnecessary suffering. And that a lot of people simply do not have the capacity at the genetic level to metabolize these. They do not have the right CYP450 family of genes that are engaged in this function. And as a result, people can end up with akathisia, homicidal tendencies, suicidal tendencies. And since we see this is now the number one cause of death in 10 to 14-year-old boys is suicide. Never had that before. And this is the group most likely to be taking one of these antipsychotic or antidepressant medications. So she's asking for us to look at the truth of this. And do we have that capacity? Not when it comes to the pharmaceutical industry and doctors having to acknowledge they've been doing something wrong. They will stick with a wrong fell paradigm indefinitely. But I appreciate you taking the time because it allows those of us who do not want and would not take these medications, one more reason why we shouldn't. Thank you very much for your work on this field, and we look forward to interviewing you again.
Thank you very much, Gary.
My guest today, and I'll spell the name because it's pronounced differently than it is spelled, is YOLANDELUCIRE. Her website is lucria.com.au. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day.